What's going on this morning, Cardell?
Not much, man.
Thank you.
About the grind.
Hey, look, man. I know that already means you're somewhere in a gym. I know you're at a DMV live period event this morning. I want to welcome everybody to this morning's show. Got Cardell Dudley on the phone with me. Wilson Tarpe Jr. is another edition of The Focus. You know, we're coming. We're as you can see, this is a Saturday, so you know that means we're busy next week, and next week is a very, very busy week. So we're trying to be proactive and get next week's show knocked out the way today. We got a lot to talk about, but first, we're gonna start off with our weekly Wizard segment. So we were in Capital One Arena last night. Not the best of nights for Washington.
Nope. For the Assembly is embarrassing. All the bad habits that they've been overlooking, nonchalantly just dismissing. It caught up last night. That was probably the most embarrassing loss of the season to me because of the stakes right now, them trying to fight for seeding, the playoffs literally a week or so away. And you want to go in the playoffs on momentum, with a good momentum. You want to go in establishing good habits so you can try to make a run. And I don't want to hear the excuses, Wall ain't play, Wall ain't had nothing to do that. You lost to a team, what I think was seven guys that had G League time, major G League time this year. And that's no knock against G League guys. Clearly, G League guys can play and everything. Otherwise, they wouldn't be in the farm system, so to speak, being evaluated. But you have two max players. One is an all-star. That should never happen on your home court. They allow 48% shooting from the field. The Hawks didn't even play with their best player, Dennis Schroeder. Three other guys were out with injury and stuff like that. They basically, you know, playing young guys just to see who they're thinking about going to keep on the team for summer league, going in a training camp next year. They're evaluating right now because they're not going anywhere this season. You lost to a 22-win team, arguably the worst in the league, in your home-built gym as you gear up for the playoffs. They outplayed y'all down the stretch. They outscored you 16-4 down the stretch. And then after the game, guys don't want to talk. They frustrated everything. At this point, man, no disrespect. Nobody give a damn about y'all frustrated. People should be frustrated looking at y'all. Some got to give, man. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to hear this about Scott Brooks and everything. Everybody was playing the coach. When people going to start looking at the players? When things go good, players like to say, hey, man, it's us. We're the ones out there playing. We the one that got all this basketball expertise and stuff like that. Cool. Now, what happens when they lose? They're gone. I did an answer, and it ain't all of them. I give Porter, he ain't really want to, but he did it. Tomas is there, and this is something I always see with John Wall. Win or lose, good or bad, win or lose, he always there. He's a true professional. Even though people like to make him out to be something that he's not, I give him proper respect because he did. He did to answer the question. He taking on the chain. He like, man, look, I'm going to keep fighting. That's him. That's why I love John Wall. I can't say that for the rest of the team, and that's the problem. You see what I'm saying? Markeith, man, look. Why are you getting ejected when you know the stakes? Why are you getting ejected in the first quarter? Because you ain't get a call. You ain't got a call. They missed a call every game this season. They missed calls every game of your life. Why is it so bad now? Homie, if you ain't really want to play, don't play. Just tell Brooks, I want to sit out. I'm tired. I'd rather have that than you just do that, man. Because now it threw a monkey wrench in the team. Now everybody got adjusted. That's selfishness. And that's what Brooks alluded to. Now, Brooks said after the game he apologized or whatever, but the damage is done. And now that they lost, I mean, you allowed the Hawks to go on a 16-4 run. Tyler Dorsey up there hitting bombs and stuff, talking ish to the team and stuff. Like, y'all ain't nothing and everything. I'm looking at him. He talking ish to Tim Frazier and all. Like, hey, man. Prince strapping up everybody, rotating, getting on Bill. The next play, getting on Porter. Next play, getting on Oubre and everything. Come on, man. At some point, it got to be about pride and heart. And I don't see that consistently from this team outside of guys like Wall and Tomas or whatever like that, man. And I give Oubre credit. He competes, too. Everybody else ain't consistently competing. And I ain't talking about numbers, shooting the ball and everything. Compete. Get stops, man. Enough is enough, dog. Like, if y'all don't want to, man, look, whoever y'all playing the first round, look, man, why waste time? Call the NBA, be like, we ain't playing, we going to forfeit. You wasting people's time, man. Like, come on, man. Y'all pros, dog.
And that's all I got. Literally everything you just said was Yeah, and the crazy thing, you weren't in the Brooks press conference last night. That's literally, you know, the gist of the clip that we started the show with. You know, he pretty much said that he's, you know, he's kind of sick of the team. He's sick of the speaking. It's about actions. And they put themselves in this situation. There's two games left in the season. You got Tuesday when they host the Celtics here in D.C. And then you have they close the season Wednesday in Orlando. But the biggest thing is the playoffs start next week. We're going to find out what the team's made of because after all this is done, we're about to be done with 82 games. It's put up or shut up time, starting next Sunday. That's when the NBA playoffs officially start. As of right now, if nothing changes, they'll be playing the Raptors in the 1-8 matchup.
And I know Wall and Bill have beat the Raptors in the past, so they look favorably, but the Raptors are deeper this year. So
yeah, that bench is definitely better.
That's not going to be an easy win.
No.
And that's not going. And right now, the Raptors should be favored. They earn home court. They hungry and stuff. And like we talk about all the time. You can't just change bad habits in like a week or so.
You can't.
This been going on all season. And the one Achilles heel with the Wizards, offensively, they're gonna hang with anybody. We've seen that. Defense, man, and that's about pride and want to intensity. Always be paying attention to detail. You know what I'm saying? Just because you a guard and you see a big man going to the basket, don't mean you just stand there watching him dunk the ball. Get in the way. Try to get the strip or something. You'd be surprised. Down. They just might miss the layup. And then it's a good play. Then you go on the other way.
Or force a bad pass. But yeah, that just being active changes so much. Totally agree with you.
And that's all the Hawks did was scrap. I don't see no sense of urgency coming into the game. Everybody, you know, you can look at dudes' faces, man. Some dudes look like they're ready to play. They got a serious look on their face. Other dudes looking like they, man, it's all good, baby. This gonna be an easy win, man. It's all good, man. We played the Cavs tough last night. You know, hard loss, but they come to Hawks, man. They trash. We gonna get them up out of there. But the boys from the G League, like, they auditioning for a job. They hungry, and they play hungry.
That's the one thing that was very noticeable very early on. Was one team was playing with a hunger that the other team couldn't really match.
And my point is with the Wizards, why aren't you playing with the same hunger? What have you accomplished?
I don't know. That's been one of the biggest questions all year, man. You know, we've talked about that a lot, and that's just one of those things where it just doesn't make any sense. And the biggest thing that stood out to me from what Scott Brooks said, before he closed the press conference, was he doesn't care what the lineups look like, essentially, but he wants five guys out there that are going to compete. That's essentially what he said. Again, I'm paraphrasing, but it seems like he's reached his boiling point as well, to which I don't blame him. It was an unacceptable loss last night. The way that it happened, and especially with the ball sticking, there's no reason for that. Like, it's as he said, it's too late in the season for this.
Exactly, man. And then you can't take it for granted. Like I said, talent-wise, this is the deepest team that a guy like John Wall has had in his career, other than that one year with Paul Pierce and those guys. When he broke his hand, they had a good chance to get to the Eastern Conference Finals before he broke his hand. Mm-hmm. With that being said, you got to take advantage, man, because I don't know if people really paying attention. It's some young teams. Like I said, when we was coming in the season, people were just like, oh, the East going to be terrible. I'm like, nah, it's some young teams with potential we got to pay close attention to. But those young teams they're reaching their potential a lot quicker than what I was hoping for. So the future ain't promised. Even if, let's say, LeBron and Cavs get knocked off this year, that's probably going to mean either the Raptors stepped up or Philly or somebody like that stepped up. And we all know once Kyrie and Gordon Hayward come back, Boston going to be hell next year. So then what? So you taking this is a clear chance for y'all to go ahead and make an impact, and y'all not taking advantage. Y'all just acting like it's a given. It's not, man. And that's what's disheartening, man. The 16-4 run to close out the game. Come on, man. The Hawks. Come on, man. That's just. Now, one person wanted to get a stop, but everybody wants to play. Don't nobody want to answer, you know, and be professional, answer questions. That's the name of the game when you a pro. You got to stand there and, you know, handle business. If they would have won, let's put it this way. If they would have beat the Cavs up, might beat the Hawks. Or they would gladly stay in the locker room. What's up? What y'all need? Yeah, man, we played good and all that. Oh, yeah. Love to see that. But they don't want to hear that. Come on, man. Nice. And that just shows, like, you know, guy I was talking to earlier about the game. He said that shows weakness. They're not mentally tough.
Look, man, there's been nothing that has been said this morning that has not been fair and if not factual. So
LeBron stood up to the music. They just lost. Yeah. Probably lost the third seed. He stood there. They asked him about the team that just beat him. Ben Simmons dropped the triple dub on him and all that without Embiid and all that. He gave him props. He stood there. So why can't he? Don't get me started,
like
man.
Said,
so until that changes, it's going to be a short playoff run. They're going to go home in the first round.
Man.
Simple as that.
These are facts. But you enjoy the rest of the event, man. Thank you so much for calling in. You know, the Wizards segment isn't the same without you. And then, you know, get a little bit of rest after today's event because next week's hard work, man. Heavy lifting next week.
Yes, sir. I'm looking forward to it, though. It's going to be fun.
You have a good one.
You too, man.
All right, folks, Cardale Dudley, that was a Wizards segment. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, I got a special guest calling in to talk about the WNBA draft. All right, folks, welcome back to The Focus. Want to say we are happily joined by Miss Anila Khan. Thank you so much for calling in this morning. I know it was on short notice. We're so happy to have you join us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So the WNBA draft is coming up this week. We're big followers of the league, as are you with your blog, wbasketballblog.wordpress.com, which is a wealth of great information there. And I hope everybody just check out the graphic on screen, take a visit, and give her a follow on Twitter. So it's a big week coming up for the league. This, you know, a lot of people are in love with just maybe the top four players in the draft, where almost everybody's in agreeance. Maybe not the order that they go in, but, you know, the consensus is pretty much the same. So I'm going to ask you about those top four players being Asia Wilson, Kelsey Mitchell, Diamond DeShields, and then something I don't think too many people expected was after the UConn loss, a few days later, Azaree Stevens decided that she's going to join the NBA and leave a year early.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, to start off, Asia Wilson is the game changer for the Las Vegas Aces. I think the Las Vegas Aces are getting a future franchise player. And because they're such a new franchise, this player is going to do really well for them. And I think what's so great about Asia Wilson is her ability to affect both ends of the floor. And I think Bill Laimbeer, the head coach, is going to be thrilled to have her. As for the second player that most people think will be picked by the Indiana Fever, is Kelsey Mitchell out of Ohio State. Her ability to score the basketball is so underrated. And I think the Indiana Fever really need someone new to step up after Tamika Catchings retired 2 years ago. So as of right now, she's a perfect fit for that team. And I think a lot of people are going to be excited to see Kelsey Mitchell because of her ability, not only just her ability to score, but her ability to be like a presence. And a lot of Fever fans are very lucky indeed to have her. And then the next one was, I believe, Diamond DeShields. Now she's, this is for the Chicago Sky. Now the Sky are very intent on having her. But the thing about Diamond DeShields is that she's such a talented player, and her ability to be one of the top multifaceted players is what makes her go so high, despite the fact that she left college early on a very kind of sour note. And now that the fact that she's playing overseas is going to help her, I think, in the WNBA. And a lot of people have questions about her, like, is she going to be good? Is she going to come out? Like, is her intangibles just as good as her tangibles? So that will be interesting. And the next one is Azaree Stevens from Connecticut, which a lot of people did not think she would be draft eligible this year. A lot of people thought she was going to come into 2019 draft, which is also, by the way, a very good draft. So Azaree Stevens is a very high prospect. If it were up to me, I would have drafted her second after Asia Wilson, because I just think she has the ability to be really good. Now, I don't know if it's going to be up to her, basically, if she can do this, but she can shoot outside and inside, and she's 6'6". So to have somebody like that, like along the lines of Washington Mystic star Della Don, Candace Parker, you need like those kind of players, and she could be one of those players. So whichever team gets her, and if she develops properly and along the way, she could be really, really good, and she could be possibly contending for the Rookie of the Year award.
Right.
So those are the top four.
Right, and I love what you said about all these players, especially with Azaree. That's a special talent to have. The league's so balanced. They require a lot of their bigs to be balanced. And she already thrives in that role. When you brought up Asia Wilson, one of the things I'm looking forward to with Las Vegas, formerly the San Antonio Stars, they have such a – I mean, it's a plethora of guards on that roster, which she gets to just – that could be the final piece for them. You know, there's Kelsey Plum there. There's Mariah Jefferson. You still have Kayla McBride. In Chicago, with Kelsey Mitchell, Diamond DeShields, if those are the picks,
that puts you in a place. I think they went big last year, possibly go guard this year. That puts Chicago in a really good place after losing Elena Deladon. That's not a bad way to re-up. Looking at some of the rest of the first round and being in D.C., have to ask, a lot of folks are interested in what Coach Tabal is going to do. The Mystics really thrive offensively, but we know we don't know what's going on at guard. Taylor went down last year. Ivory Lotta was not retained. Of course, I'm going to forget her name right now. And it's Christy Tolliver. As great as she is, don't know how many more years she has left. So do they have to go guard in round one, or will you just kind of go best player available? Say if Gabby Williams is sitting right there, do you skip over her because you feel you need a guard if you're the Mystics?
Well, if I were the Mystics and Gabby Williams was still available, I would take her. Mm-hmm. And if she's not available and Victoria Vivians is mm-hmm. who the Mystics are projected to draft, not only because of her guard skills, but her ability to be really great with the Washington Mystics. And also the Washington Mystics know Vivian's game really well because Mike Tebow's daughter, Carly yes. Tebow, is the assistant coach for the Mississippi State women's basketball team. So that's what I would do. So, yes, I agree. If Gabby Williams is still there at 7, you draft her. And if she's not there and Victoria Vivians is there, you take her. Because Victoria Vivians has the ability to go. She can score from outside. She can also score from inside. And she's a great presence alongside Christy Tolliver, Elena Deladon, and Emma Mieseman. Well, sorry, Emma Mieseman's not going to play this year, but along with the other players. And Taylor Hale, by the way, is rehabbing, and she will be back on the court. So it's a great player to have for the Washington Mystics if one of those two are available. And if Victoria Vivians or Gabby Williams is not available, then I think you just go into best available at that point and you see whoever is available for them at 7.
Okay, one of the other players at 7, if in case those players that you mentioned were not available, I wouldn't have an issue with Kia Nurse sliding in as a 3-and-D guard with the way that she already plays. I feel like her game's going to translate well on the level, especially with the experience she's had on the Canadian national team. If some of those players you mentioned aren't available for Washington at that spot. But looking at the rest of the first round, I want to ask you about some of the bigs. I feel like a lot of people are excited about the guards after Asia and Azaray. I've seen some mock drafts where some of college basketball's very talented bigs were slotted into the second round. I don't know why, but you got players like Mercedes Russell, seen in the second round for some reason. A lot of people are very, I haven't really found common ground for Maria Vadiva. If you want to elaborate on her just a little bit, why are people either very high or low on her?
The reason why she's either slotted very high or very low is because of her international commitments. As mm-hmm. As many international players, they have overseas commitments, they have national team commitments, and unfortunately, they have a lot of Eurobasket commitments that conflict with the WNBA season, hence why Emma Mieseman's not going to play this year, and as well as getting ready for the World. So the World Championships are going to take place in Spain in September. So a lot of people are hesitant to draft her because she is one of the top 5 players. Okay, if we're just talking about skill, we're just talking about talent, the fact that she's only 19 is what makes her so interesting. And the reason why people have her so much lower and they have her going like 8th or 9th or 10th is because they're scared that she's not going to want to come over every year. They're scared that she's not going to commit fully every year. So then coaches are kind of hesitant to draft such a player at such a high spot, because then you're talking to fans, you're talking to sponsors, you're talking to everybody else, saying that you have this great player, but she's never available. And that's not a good look. As for Mercedes Russell, the reason why she's drafted into the second round, and I've also had her in the second round, is because when I watch her against the top prospects, I wasn't impressed. I feel like she still has a lot of room to grow. I feel like she, even though she was the number one pick coming out of the ESPN Hoops Girls, about 4 or 5 years ago, I just don't think she has fully developed to that point where she's a first-round pick and is overtaking spots from other players such as Monique Billings or other various bigs. So that's why I have her in the second round. I feel like she still can develop. She can still get better. And I think she still needs a little bit more work and more polish to be in the first round. And that's why I think, at least for me, I had her as well in the second round. And that's why you're kind of seeing like scattered places of her placement.
Right. And I love the point you brought up about Maria Vidiva, because that was just something that I know I'm not alone in wondering, because if it's not a talent issue at all. It's literally just about the commitment, which is something that is different about the women's game than the men's game. You don't really have to worry about that because, I'm not going to get into the whole pay thing, but we'll leave that alone. But one big I wanted to talk about that kind of stood out to me in the NCAA tournament, was not aware of her, and again, this is just me personally, was Marie Gillich from Oregon State.
Yes.
How do you feel she can translate to the next level? I definitely fell in love with her game in the tournament, and I'm kind of mad at myself because I did not watch Oregon State pay a lot of attention to them prior to them getting in the tournament and making a little noise.
Yeah, well, because Oregon State at that time was thought to be rebuilding because they had a lot of seniors and sophomores, and their top players like Sydney Weiss graduated, and then she went to the Sparks last year, and then you had Ruth Hamblin, Jamie Wisner, Gabby Hansen from the year before. They also left. So a lot of people thought that they were rebuilding and they weren't going to be one of the top teams. But what they showed you is that they had a really great coach in Scott Ruick and what he was able to do with them. And Marie Gillich, I think, is very talented. She's got a very nice soft touch around the basket. She can pass. She's very, very talented. And I felt like after she faced off against Tennessee and what she was able to do and what that team was able to do against Tennessee, because I had Tennessee advancing forward because I didn't think Oregon State had enough. But when I watched Marie Gillich against Mercedes Russell, this is what I'm talking about. I didn't feel like Mercedes Russell had necessarily the best game, and Marie Gillich took her game to the next level by showing that she can be just as equal and just be as better as some of the top prospects. So that's why I feel like she could be a game changer. Again, she could come off the bench. She doesn't have to score a bunch of points. She could be a really great bench contributor because in the WNBA, everything is bigger. Everything is faster. So I think Gillich will take a while to develop. And so that's why I had her going 12th to the Phoenix Mercury. And a lot of people also had her, the AP and I believe some other sites also had her, draft site, I believe, also had her going 12th. Is because the Phoenix Mercury are very talented, and I feel like alongside the Phoenix Mercury's bench, it would be a really great fit. And I could see Sandy Brondello bringing her off the bench, and I could just see it work for them. So right now, Marie Gillich is very talented, and I feel like she would be better off coming off the bench, which she probably will. So yeah, she's very intriguing. She's German. And so a lot of German and a lot of new German fans are probably going to be created from this.
There's never anything wrong with more fans, more followers to the women's game. It's always a wonderful thing. All right. So talk about I want to bring up two guards, Jordan Canada and Lexi Brown. Where do you feel their ideal fits would be?
OK, so Jordan Canada is what I've been hearing and a lot of other people have been hearing is a very coveted guard. So the Seattle Storm really need her. Because Sue Bird cannot play forever. She's going to have to retire at some point. She's about 37. She's going to be 38 in October. So, I mean, I don't know how many years she has left and or how many years she's going to commit to the Seattle Storm. That's why she's perfect at going at number 5. But she could also move up. You just never know with WNBA draft day trades because they're always out of nowhere and you feel like you know a team, but then all of a sudden they draft somebody else and you're just sitting there like, what? But anyways, Jordan Canada is talented in the sense because if I were to compare her to an NBA player, she's kind of like Russell Westbrook from the Oklahoma State Thunder in the sense that she's her ability to get to the rim is so underrated, and her ability to score, to shoot the basketball, to pass, you need that in the WNBA. You need to be quick. You need to be fast. You need to be on your feet, and she can do that in so many ways. I was just watching one of the games, one of the NCAA tournament games, sorry, it slipped out of my mind, where she just went crazy. And I felt like that was the game where she solidified herself as a top five pick. Like, I always knew she was going to be a top 10 pick, but that game, when she came out and played, I felt was addressing to everybody that, hey, I'm real, I'm a good guard, and I can do this at the next level. And it just proved it to me. I just don't remember the opponent off the top of my head. And then as for Lexi Brown, she's a really great shooter. She's from Duke. And what she can do is she's a very good defender. So you're going to need that in the WNBA. And right now, a lot of people have her as six, going to the Dallas Wings. And that would be perfect alongside Skylar Diggins, Liz Cambage, who is coming over this year to play around alongside Ariel Powers, Karima Christmas Kelly. Like, you're putting her around a very good talent, and you're not asking her to be a contributor right away, but she would be really good. And Lexi Brown is also a great three-point shooter. She's also a good shooter, and that would fit in really well with the Dallas Wings.
All right, and one of the pairings that I love so much to hear was, I love the fit of Jordan Canada going to Seattle. As you said, Sue Bird's not going to play forever, but think about the potential you have going forward in the post Sue Bird years, in that, you know, when it's officially becomes Stewie and Jewel Lloyd's team, that's one hell of a trio to go forward with, possibly, in Jordan Canada, Jewel Lloyd, and Breonna Stewart. All right, last but not least, thank you so much, by the way. Such great information, great insight. If you could just share just one of your sleeper picks, one of your favorite players that maybe has been overlooked leading up into the draft.
A draft sleeper. This is interesting. Well, a lot of people didn't have her. Like, they had her in the first round, but it was like late first round, and they had her going to New York, and they had her going all these other places. But I really like Ariel Atkins from Texas. I just think she's a really good guard/forward. And I think that any team that gets her from that point onwards, like late second round to early first round, will be really good. I also like Jamie Nared, from Tennessee. I think her ability to stretch, to rebound, to defend is so underrated. And I think the Las Vegas Aces should definitely draft her in the early second round. Like, they have the first pick in the second round. So those are some of my draft sleepers. Another one could be Lauren Goodwin from Oklahoma State. Right now she's slotted to go to Phoenix, but you just don't know with this draft. Everybody could go anywhere. I just like her ability to do so much. And at Oklahoma State, she really proved herself. And I feel like she would be also a good draft sleeper in this 2018 WNBA draft.
Well, Anila, I just want to say thank you so much. Great insight. Definitely enjoyed talking to you. We'll definitely try to have you back on maybe post-draft just to look back at the draft, once we see where everybody goes. Again, guys, for those of you that are watching, please go ahead and give her a follow on Twitter. Information is on screen at the moment. You go on and have a great day. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. Thank you. No problem. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Hello, everybody. That was Anila Khan on Twitter at WHoopsBlogger. Please go and check out her site. She has several rounds of several versions of mock drafts up, amongst very, very just a lot of great information on the women's game, both on the collegiate and professional levels. We're going to take a quick break. You're watching The Focus. And when we get back, we're going to talk a got a DC United update for you. Got arena football update. Yeah, that season's about to start. So see you on the other side of the break. Welcome back, everybody. So as you can see, had a great conversation. I want to say yesterday. I'm already losing track of my days. We've been kind of busy. But I had a great conversation with the head coach of the Washington Valor. Their season starts. This officially starts this upcoming Friday. They will be taking on the Baltimore Brigade. That game will be played at Royal Farms Arena in Baltimore. The following week will be their home opener, where they host Albany. Someone you need to follow if you are an AFL fan, in addition to tuning in every week, our guy Mike Webb. He's on Twitter at Mike Sinatra. Next show, I'll go ahead and make sure we have his Twitter handle up for you guys to visually see, and then it's easier for you to go follow. He's going to be pretty much our beat reporter for the Washington Valor. I'll be helping out a little bit, but that's primarily his show. He's a big-time AFL fan, has a wealth of knowledge. I know a little bit, but he's really, you know, he's on it and on a whole different level that I just have to sit back and respect. So yesterday was the last day of training camp for the Valor. It was a two-week camp. They added several new players from last year. One of the things to pay attention to this season is they have to fix their offense. They finished at the bottom, if not near the bottom. Pretty much they finished last offensively last year. They had a hard time putting points on the board. More often than not, they were playing from behind. They went and out and got a very established quarterback, AFL champion and former MVP. So, you know, he gets a chance to come here and, you know, work his magic. One of the biggest things I took from Coach was talking about in year two, just being more of a team and having roles. And, you know, that we talk about that no matter the sport, how important that is. And, you know, the teams that do best are the teams with clear and defined roles where no one's worried about who's doing what. Just that, you know, the team is succeeding, and that's literally all that matters. All right, so talk to about another local game, local team. Moving on to soccer, going to switch gears just a little bit. DC United, they're currently 10th in the East after five matches. They're 0-3-2. That means they have yet to win their first game of the season. Still very early. It's an extremely long year in the MLS. They're off this week, but they've been training as expected and as they should be doing. They return to action next week in their second home away from home game. The first was at the Maryland Soccerplex, where they hosted Houston. Columbus Crew will be the visiting team, but the venue for next week will be the Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium in Annapolis. So it's going to be a little bit of a drive, but I expect the faithful supporters to be out there and in full force. And that's just a beautiful stadium to be in. I've been there like maybe twice. Have not been there for an MLS game. So definitely look forward to seeing how, you know, what the atmosphere is like in that environment. Definitely a great place to be. All right. So WNBA draft. Really, truly enjoyed talking to Anila Khan. We're going to talk to more people this upcoming week. We'll have more coverage. But we've talked about the NFL draft just a little bit. We had Coach Durr on last week. So I want to share some of my draft crushes. So, Damo, I'm interested to see what you have to say or think about this. You know, I'm going to share them, and we'll see what happens. If you're bothered that strongly by any of these names, we might give you a mic. We don't know if you're bothered. Again, these are my personal guys who've made my list. We got Quentin Nelson. You know, no shocker there. I wish you guys could see Damo's face because it's going to be funny. All right, so we got Quentin Nelson, the big mauler from Notre Dame. I'm not going in any order. Just sharing, you know, guys that are very high on Wilson's personal wish list, whether it's my team or someone else's. Just that, you know, if your team gets this guy, I feel like, you know, just know that I'm happy for you. All right. So the next guy, Derwin James, my guy at Florida State. You guys already know the reasons as to why I feel that way. Another guy, Marcus Davenport, is really weird to me because some folks don't like him because of some reason about he doesn't show enough passion, which is weird to me because some of the best players are stone cold killers in their fields and they don't show emotion. All I care about is that you get the job done and you get the job done well and that I can count on you to get said job done. So I have no issue with Marcus Davenport. The other thing that sold it for me, maybe a month ago on NFL Network, DeMarcus Ware was talking about the young man. DeMarcus Ware stood up, took off his sports coat, had the guy, he was had the his co-host, you know, hold out a tape measure to measure DeMarcus's wingspan live on air. DeMarcus's wingspan is similar to Marcus Davenport's. And DeMarcus went to explain why that type of wingspan helps Marcus Davenport do what he does so well, which is keep offensive linemen's hands virtually off him the entire time. And that's one of the reasons I like him so much, is that anytime, you know, a guy can get their hands on you as a pass rusher, you're probably not doing your job. The fact that they, like, in some cases, it's just physically impossible for some offensive linemen, because of reach, just like in boxing sometimes, you got to go all the way up in somebody's chest to get inside. And if you're a pass rusher and you're able to keep them at bay, not only does it help you in terms of rushing the passer and bending, but you're able to you have the freedom to get a hand up to bat passes. And again, I'm just really high on Marcus Davenport just because he produces. And, like, that's what matters to me. I don't care about the – you don't need to smile. You don't need to celebrate after everything. Just play. And he does that well enough for me to make my list. To no one's surprise, Lamar Jackson is another guy on my list. Very high on him. Been high on him for a couple years. And that's not going to change at all. And we've talked about him quite enough, so we're not going to go into detail here. All right, another guy, Rashawn Evans, linebacker out of Alabama. Where I feel if Reuben Foster wasn't in Alabama, we'd be talking about Rashawn Evans, similar to how we talk about Reuben. But unfortunately for Rashawn, he had to play next to Reuben because Reuben is indeed alive, breathing in, did play at Alabama. But Rashawn is special. I like Rashawn because he can play in space, but he's a demon rushing the passer. There are many clips out there of him, not just, you know, typically when linebackers rush, you might see him just beat somebody with speed or just a typical bull rush, but he can do it both ways. And I like him just because he's versatile. And I think someone's going to come up on a really quality player. You know, should you take him? Rashad Penny. I know everyone's in love with some bigger name running backs in here. A lot of people like Chubb out of Georgia. Michelle, who's also on my list. But Rashad Penny's probably one of my favorite backs in this class simply because there's not one thing that he does great, but he does everything else. Like, he's just good at everything. He's just solid. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. The fact that you're solid, you're consistent. Consistency is a skill. That is something that you can depend on. And I feel like, again, if some team is lucky enough to get him, it's going to pay off for them where you don't have to take him in the first round. I'm not saying he's Alvin Kamara or Kareem Hunt, but similar to the type of production that if you look at where they were drafted in third or fourth round, I'm saying if you get Penny, you know, third, fourth, if he's there, you came up. That's all I'm saying. The type of value from a value standpoint, you definitely came up. All right. Another guy, Dante Jackson out of LSU. I don't know what's in the water at LSU. They somehow come up on corners year in, year out. I know there's that big argument about who's DBU. I don't really care about that. He's an athletic freak. You know, he's a little bit under 6 feet. Just really, really explosive. Obviously, when you're that gifted, sometimes your technique isn't up to par. So he has a little room to grow. There, but I truly feel like if someone can get their hands on him, and you know, coaches get paid too. So if you can get your hands on him, bring him in, you can turn this kid loose. You might have something. Another guy from Florida State's defense, they've been pumping out defensive linemen over the past few years. We got DeMarcus Nnamdi. I think that's one of those guys where it's a great value pick later. And he may be somebody who's an overachiever. Again, depending on where he's picked. Will Hernandez. I like him just because he's an offensive lineman. He plays. He's just nasty. And that's what you want. You want somebody up front that he's the type of dude where not only is he going to have an issue with you trying to beat him, if you touch his quarterback, like, you know, sometimes quarterbacks get hit and nobody really, you know, steps up to help the quarterback up. Like, I feel like Will Hernandez is a guy that not only takes it personal that you beat one of his partners, but that you hit his quarterback. Like, I like that, and I think that's the type of guy, you know, if you get him in the second round or even if you take him late first, that's a starter for many years. And that type of tenacity, he's going to be a guy that people don't want to deal with on an offensive line. And that's the type of guy I would want, paving the way for my running back and protecting my quarterback, somebody that nobody wants a part of. All right. So another guy, going to move on to Colorado's Isaiah Oliver. I found out about him last year when I started to do a little bit of research on Keller Witherspoon. Because, again, you know, I try to do my best to be honest. I heard of Keller Witherspoon, had some people tell me about him. I didn't pay him too much attention. So, obviously, after the Niners drafted him, then I tried to do a little bit more homework. But Isaiah Oliver is a name that I learned last year while watching Kello's college tape. They were a very gifted secondary there. Isaiah Oliver is another big DB with I don't think his feet are as good as Kello's, but they're better than other people's. And I like his size. You know, at corner, you know, you're not allowed to have, you know, we're out of the era when you're really allowed to grab wide receivers. So the like your ability to mirror, your ability to defend without touching is at an all-time high. So I like Isaiah Oliver in a combination of skills that he brings to the table. Justin Reed, Eric Reed's younger brother. And we can talk about Eric Reed, you know, the next show that we have and what's going on with him. But I like his brother coming out of Stanford. He's versatile, like his older brother. I think he does a few things better than his older brother. He's not as big as his older brother yet. But I do think that's another great value guy. Again, Sony Michel, we already talked about that. I think everybody knows how I feel about Sony Michel. Equanimeous St. Brown. One heck of a name. I like his name. But also, he's one of those guys where if he played with a better quarterback, everybody would know who he is. And it's not his fault as a receiver. We've seen this many times on a collegiate level where sometimes receivers get overlooked because the offenses that they play in, or sometimes because the guy throwing the ball is not up to par. In this case, it's the guy throwing the ball was not up to par, and Equanimeous was vastly underused during his time at Notre Dame. But there, if you look hard enough, there are instances and you know, proof that he can get it done. I know I was talking about good feet just a couple minutes ago. This is a really big guy. He has the feet of a dancer. Very, very graceful at 6'5". And he's not like 230, anything like 6'5", 205, 210. Really graceful. Again, if you can get your hands on him, I think that would be a fun guy. And it's not that he's soft at, you know, in 50-50 situations. He's just not, again, he's just not 6'5", 225. He's 6'5", 205, 6'5", 210. Ran a 4.42 at the combine. He can move, but what I love the most are his feet. If you got good feet as a big guy, you're going to end up, you put yourself in a good position to succeed at the next level. Another guy, Florida State guy, Josh Sweat. Know a lot of injuries plagued him during his career, but I think that's another guy where, you know, when he's right, he's a freak of nature. Can't go wrong there. Deshaun Elliott, safety at Texas. They produced pretty quality safeties, all right? They do that there. Again, not getting to the whole DBU thing again. But as a very solid player, and we were talking a couple weeks ago, safeties, they should be a premium in this league right now. We see a lot of packages, a lot of sub-packages, but sometimes some teams really do play with three safeties on the field, or at least have three safeties in their regular rotation. And this is one of my, like, truly, truly favorite guys, Hercules Mata'afa. Rolling ball of knives. He played inside in college. A lot of folks are either high on him or stupid low in projecting him to play outside. But my thing is, if you can play inside at, like, 250 and win routinely, you should be, like, it's, I feel like it's not too difficult to imagine him beating people outside, considering he was doing it inside with an insanely quick first step and solid hand game. And now to, you know, my last couple guys. Deonte Burnett, wide receiver out of USC. He just stays open, man. Dude's a separator. Those are the type of guys where, you know, you might overlook him because of size or, you know, he didn't run the blazing 40. If you stay open, isn't that the name of the game? That's a trait, right? I heard that it helps move the ball if you can get open. Just a rumor. And then last but not least, another Florida State guy, Auden Tate. I know a lot of people either, you know, they either like him or they hate him. I'm a guy where I feel like if I wouldn't take him in the first three rounds, unless you had an extra pick in like the third round, then you could take a flyer to make sure that he's, you know, that he's doesn't get taken by the fourth. But he's a big guy. He plays big because there's a lot of big guys that sometimes don't know how to use their body and their size and that catch radius. He's a big guy, decent route runner. I know he doesn't have great deep speed in terms of, you know, you check his 40 time, anything like that. But again, you know, this conversation I've had routinely with people in my life, when guys are that big, you know, typically they don't run great 40s. You know, those guys that do, they're freaking nature. Those guys are really special. But, you know, Damo, again, I'm not crazy. If you got long legs, the further you run, don't you start striding and leaving people? Okay, cool. Okay, cool. Because I'm not saying, like, it reminds me of when Alshon Jeffrey came out. Everybody like, oh, he ran a slow 40 time. Alshon Jeffrey beats people deep just sometimes because, you know, he can get downfield. He has long strides. And at the end of the day, he's bigger than you. That's Sometimes it just comes down. He's bigger than you. And one of the things I like about Auden, I like how he sets people up on his routes. He's not the greatest route runner, but I feel like the kid knows what he's doing. So it's not like he's just some – I don't think he's as raw as everybody, you know, some of his detractors would say. All right, folks, it's been fun. Again, next week is a very, 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 very busy week. You know, Cardell's going to be out in Portsmouth. We got the WNBA draft on Thursday. What else we got next week? Of course, I'm going to draw a blank after saying that it's a big week. Wizards Celtics on Tuesday. Friday, Washington Valor, Baltimore Brigade in Baltimore on Friday night. Saturday, we got DC United taking on the Columbus Crew in Baltimore at Navy Marine Corps Stadium. So it's going to be fun. So stick with us again. We truly appreciate it. For your local coverage, man, we try to do our best and we're going to keep pushing. Don't forget, we got the mailbag on Thursdays. And get over to finestmag.com and mymindonsports.com. Again, want to thank our guest today. So, yeah, Cardell, I'm going to thank him as a guest because he called in. And then, again, Anila Khan, W Hoops blogger on Twitter, for calling in. Please follow her blog. Please give her a follow on Twitter. And we can't wait to bring back you know, we can't wait to show you the coverage we come back with from all the events we're attending next week. And then, like, the NBA playoffs are right there, too, man. There's a lot coming up. We can't wait to discuss it all. And then in a couple weeks, like, we're getting really close. Domo, the NFL draft's going to be happening. Like, we're there, man. It's a busy month. And I'd be remiss because I'm a geek. I can't do this. You know, I'm going to show that. Infinity Wars comes out this month, too. So got to say that. Got my tickets already. Hope y'all got y'all tickets. But we'll see y'all. Again, this show is for, you know, this week coming up. We'll see y'all the following week right here, Bliss FM on DCTV. This has been The Focus.